Chloe with the wolf mug.
Yeah, this is a Stark mug. Thank you for giving me the Stark mug.
Thank you for giving me the Phantom of the Opera mug.
These are both Sansan mug.
These are both very excellent choices.
Absolutely.
You understand us?
Yeah, it's a Sansan mug.
Sandor Clegane, played by Gerard Butler.
Fire and Blood.
Dude, Fire and Blood.
The Volume
tonight.
One.
We get it tonight.
Fire and Blood.
We get it tonight.
Are you guys excited?
Extremely excited. Been looking forward to it for a while.
I'm very excited. How excited are you? If you say like really between excited. 1 to 10, 10 being a new... You were just saying the last book release you had been to was in 2007.
Yeah.
For Deathly Hallows.
Yeah, Deathly Hallows was the last book release I probably went to.
11 years ago.
Yeah, it's been 11 years.
Probably same, to be honest.
It's been 11 years since you've had a good reason to go to an event release. For a book release.
Yeah, it has.
Take that, literature.
Also, I mean... It's the only thing I'm more passionate about, I guess. You know, I'm sure there's been other. Have there really been other release parties?
Did you go to the Dance with Dragons release party? Did they have any?
Not near where I was, certainly.
I had my own
party. I had my own release party. I just got stoned in the porch and read a Dance with Dragons, petting a cat.
Oh my God.
It was the best possible release party.
See, I didn't get into Thrones for about a year after Dance, so.
It was the same, right around the same time the show started.
Yeah, right around
the Dance came right after season one.
I remember that.
Yeah, that's literally, it came out right before I started. I started after season two.
Same with my dearling co-host, Jeff.
Oh, Jeff. Oh, Jeff also.
I was going to say my dear and my darling, and I just combined them into my dearling. That's just what happens.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I found out about it from the promo that HBO released, and I was in college, and I was like, oh my God, swords, shields.
They're finally listening to us.
Swords and shields?
Look at it. Yeah. There's
this is what we've been asking for.
There's definitely going to be some rangers in this, for sure. And once they start adapting it, they're going to bring in elements from my favorite video game, so I'm going to watch. And if there's any TV shows that have medieval flags that are like the triangle flags that have like the seals on it, you know, we were talking about
banners,
seeing sigils on the bar stools, and you're like immediately interested and like, oh, I wonder what's the lore of this place.
Those pendant flags,
Pendant flags are awesome.
True. Yeah. I was just a little 15-year-old when The Feast for Crows came out, and I had
read
Lord of the Rings and played Kingdom Hearts and was just into nonsense emo fantasy, but also would start reading like pretentious books for the first time, like, you know, great English literature books for the first time.
Like which ones?
Oh, like, you know, you just run down the list like any high school teacher would give you. Like I read Ulysses for the first time. I was reading Moby Dick and all the huge ones, and was really into it. So, you know, something like Song of Ice and Fire was just the perfect mix of the genre fantasy stuff that I loved, but also like really dense and, you know, adult and pretentious.
A Feast for Crows is perfect for that.
Feast for Crows came out right around then. My mom was reading the books and she was like, you like these. So I read the first three like real quickly, like leading up to Feast.
And little did mom know.
And then Feast came out. Yeah, exactly. She makes fun of me.
Look at you now.
She's like, I'm the actual fan in the family.
Listen,
you're just the latecomer, and I'm like
keeping the lights on with it.
Mom, just because you're accurate doesn't mean you're interesting. To steal from John,
she has such an advantage being so much older than you. Her opinions on it are so much better.
True. Well, that's generally true. Yeah. My mom's opinions are just better.
You're like,
she should have the podcast.
She's great. The first time I met her, she was like, I want to read your Chardane essays. And I was like, I love her.
That is such a cool thing to have.
I know. Whose mom says that? My mom's like, what's in a Chardane? And I'm like, well, Mom, this is the fifth time I've tried to explain to you about a Chardane.
Who even is she?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll all find out one day.
Probably not tonight, though.
Literally, someone asked Jeff on Twitter the other day, I don't remember Quentin Martell. I read the books, but I don't know who
he
is.
His name's Emmett, right?
And I was like, my soul. my soul. Why? Why would you do this to me, of all people?
I mean, he had actual chapters.
What was it like for you guys when you were reading A Feast for Crows and you realized as the Brienne chapters went on and you got to the Whispers that this is the kind of book it's going to be? That this is going to be the main stuff in it? This isn't like, it wasn't leading to something else, that it was leading to this.
That's a very specific moment. I loved it. I love Feast. I love the Brienne chapters. I love that the main character is Cersei. I think that's hilarious that the main character of the book is the evil queen from Snow White. I think that's wonderful. I like, Feast has a very specific tone. And some very specific themes unto itself. I certainly get being disappointed by the lack of, you know, Davos and Daenerys. And
oh no, no Jon, no Dany, no Tyrion. What are we going to do? How could the story go on?
Is that some slight sarcasm on your part there?
I had no sarcasm.
I mean, the problem was just the wait. Like, I wouldn't want to wait 11 years for my favorite character.
That.
So Feast was hurt. Feast was hurt by the release schedule and the way Martin handled it. No question about
it. That's why I don't understand how people are just so, like... they're so whiny about TWoW not coming out, right? Like, they're like this weight is killing me. And I'm like, that's all this fandom does. Like, that's right, what that's it's thing. About. Like,
delayed gratification is the name of the game.
You know what? Exactly. My generation and above, we are just, you know, it's that instant gratification. I get it. But that's because we've been taught that and we want it. We want it now. Well, guess what? You need to wait. God damn it.
Well, it's also the weird combination of we hated the last two books and where's the next one? We want it now. It's like, but according to you, there hasn't been any good material in this series since the year 2000. Yeah, so
you useless old man, put the books out. We hate you, but we want your books. Like, right, what?
That's such a weird dynamic. It's like, pick one. It's like...
Support your authors.
That's a certain kind of dynamic going on with the nonsense about the Star Wars movies, too, now. You know, we hate this, but when's the next one?
And it better be better than the one we just watched.
Right. There's a certain kind of gratification that seems to come from that within those fandoms right now, which is just kind of annoying.
And maybe you didn't grow with the books, you know? Maybe that's acceptable. Maybe you're just, they're not for you anymore. And that's fine. Just walk away.
That's allowed. I mean, I'm definitely still on board with the wait, but I don't blame people for, you know, wanting to be like, I need something else just to keep the juices flowing mentally and emotionally 7 years after the last book. That's perfectly legit.
Yeah.
Since you were 15, though.
Think about how his tastes have changed. Think about how what he probably thought when he was 15 versus like now. Kidding. It's 13 years later. Question. Oh man, what did you used to think when you were 15?
I definitely took a while to appreciate Catelyn. I was into Sansa pretty much right away, but Catelyn took me a while at first, just because of the dynamic with Jon was hard to get past.
Now you're an adult and you're like, who needs?
No, I'm an adult. I realize, she was just asked to, like, raise and be around this other man's
bastard. You're like, now that, like, I have to give myself life every day.
Right. It's like, no one asked Nerys Targaryen to raise Daemon Blackfyre. Right. And if they did, she'd be understandably distraught about that. So.
Especially as a highborn. I mean, exactly. That was
especially
unheard of.
Especially in Winterfell, yeah.
You still feel Jon's pain, but I'm able to take things much more in context now and not just adopt my feelings.
You can weigh them against each other, you know, and kind of say they're separate things. And, yeah.
So you were wrong. So I was wrong at the time. But reading Feast right after the first three was definitely a great experience because of, as Zach said, just how different it is. And most of the book is from new point of views, from female point of view characters.
Well, and imagine being a 15-year-old reading the series like now, being an 18-year-old reading the series like compared to what you know as an adult now, like after you've raised yourself on your own successfully for a few years.
Sure. It makes you look at a lot of those characters differently.
I don't know. Successfully for myself, I'd say that. But
definitely, you love Davos more once you start working.
Right. Even in like the fandom, talking to people that have such different point of views just because of what age they are and where they come from. And how they've lived so far.
I really love that.
These books are so expansive it's allowable. You can see that. Like, different people read these books for different reasons. There are different people that theorize different ways about things that you go, I would never think that, and you're crazy, and that's wrong. But, I mean, these books are so diverse, and they have so many different ways to read them and analyze them.
And everyone's welcome.
Yeah.
You know? And that's
even if they're wrong.
That's so cool.
Especially if they're wrong.
There's a lot of wrong opinions, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to get a few of those opinions changed probably when we get this book coming out tonight. I'm sure there'll be some good, heavy foreshadowing towards what's going to happen in the main series.
Are you worried about that at all? Like,
no.
Where do we go from here tonight when we see some opening scenes
that are going to maybe shed light on some of that stuff? TWoW is going to be the real test of everyone's friendship in this community.
Yeah, the ripple effects of watching canon change overnight and certain things proven true and certain things proven false, certain things not addressed at all.
It is going to be nuts.
That's going to be an interesting test as well as like a great moment for the community. There's going to be some fighting, recriminations, tears, reputations will rise and fall. It's kind of a big deal. I mean, our fandom has grown so huge since the last book, in large part because of the show.
And we're all just standing on this precipice, just hanging over.
We're all just waiting for a big piece of information. There's really nothing comparable to this. I mean, even something like, you know, The Force Awakens bringing Star Wars back to the public consciousness and money. There was no really big revelation we were waiting for in that movie.
It was
just
like,
it's going to be another Star Wars movie. Yeah. Yay! Like, there's nothing critical, no story information that everyone was hinging on. But this is like, we have speculated this entire book. We've like speculated multiple books worth of information between us. Mm-hmm. And now the actual thing is going to show up eventually. That's going to be just such a weird moment.
As we, like, gravitate towards the finish line, we all can feel it, too. Like, we're all, like, desperately scavenging at, like, information to create theories. Like, you can feel it. Like, every day you wake up, you're like, oh, this content creator wrote about this today. Interesting. It's like, what can we come up with anymore? So come on, George. We need
Second
it.
Dry.
But, Fire and Blood will give us a little, it'll whet our appetites for a while until we can get T-WoW in front of us.
But as you say, Zach, there's definitely going to be some scraps to fight over.
Mm-hmm.
And there will definitely be some foreshadowing and stuff in the series. We've already seen that from the excerpts. So
also, we'll it's like, who can write what first after tonight? The race is on.
The race is on, to draw the hottest takes.
Yeah, the hottest takes. Yeah. Who's got the first meta
the most
essay?
Dramatic conclusions.
We were just saying it was going to be
a long wait between the long night.
Wait, we were seeing the scraps to pick over.
Oh, yeah, the scraps. Oh, yeah.
And, you saw that with the Alisan excerpt for sure. Yeah. We were all drawing conclusions from it.
Mm-hmm. I already drew those conclusions a long time ago, though. Just putting that out there.
Right, but
isn't it
so
really
nice
good being
that,
pretty right.
to see the other side of the story so specifically, though?
Oh my gosh, when that excerpt came out, I was so excited because I was like, all of my Queen Alisan and Sansa writing has finally paid off.
Yeah, there were some very clear parallels.
Very clear that. Sansa parallels going on in that. Like when Alisan holds her woman court of 200 women in King's Landing where she hears their grievances. Mm-hmm. Especially, we're hitting those Blackwater chapters right now. We're just finishing those with Sansa at Girls Gone Canon, and so we just finished Sansa 7 and Sansa 6, where, like, Sansa straight up, you know, holds woman's court. She comforts them, says, oh, the king is still fighting. He's fighting so bravely, and the queen has gone to draw the moat, and it's all going to be fine. You know, we're in the safest place. Let's sing now a prayer. Like,
if
straight
I'm ever
up.
Queen, I'll make them
yeah,
love me.
If I'm ever queen, I'll make them love me moments in those two chapters are straight up just, like, Queen Alisan, good Queen Sansa, good Queen Allie, like, right
yep.
there.
I mean, the best thing about that for me is that, like, you know, Sansa's gone from believing wholeheartedly in the stories and songs to having that shattered to realizing she can use them for good, even though she knows they're lies. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, you get that great turnaround. I think you can see some of that with Alisan as well, that she's kind of had this mm-hmm. maturation process. And the way she goes up to through White Harbor and gains the Manderlys support before driving north, that seems definitely what Sansa's going to do with the Knights of the Vale. That just is the logical geographic path for mm-hmm. her to get back home. And then Alaric Stark, the guy that Alisan meets, is
such an interesting character.
Very clear Stannis parallel with pretty much every one of his descriptions. Described as
so you're excited. You're reading this. You're
excited.
Like, how frigid is
my
he?
My boy.
How much is
he? It's wonderful. He's described as hard and cold and tight-fisted and an asshole. But then it says Alisan got to know him and found he wasn't entirely that way. And he had people who liked him.
You're like, you know, I
a good
knew
sense
it.
Of humor,
I thought that about
and
him.
And I was just crying while I read this.
He
I was
like,
my
I
son.
Love, he's over here starting to ship Stanza. He's like, Stannis and Sansa.
They would have a fun interaction. I don't ship Stannis with anyone. No one deserves to sleep with Stannis. I wouldn't wish that fate upon my worst enemy.
It's a cool name, though, Stanza.
Stanza? Yeah, like a stanza.
Cool.
Like
yeah,
a
exactly.
musical stanza,
like
you know, because it is a song like, of ice and fire.
But you go, suh.
Leviosa.
Thank you. Add a little bit of Valley Girl to the end of that.
Yeah. It always sounds better with a little bit of Valley Girl added to
Wingardium
it.
Wingardium Leviosa.
I loved, like, how much with spells in those books, how the incantation, like, just in that book, you had to pay attention. Then any other time, it was like that and, like, yep. Diagon Alley, and those are the only two times that came up.
Yeah, otherwise it's just kind of whatever's happening.
World building in Harry Potter is so clearly by the seat of the pants.
Yeah,
it's part of the fun because anything can happen. But also when you look back and it's like, there are no rules.
This weekend you saw the new movie,
oh, yeah.
Fantastic Beasts.
Crimes of Grindelwald.
You said, how did you find it to hold up? Was it?
I thought at the very end, if anyone's already watched it, there's a CGI thing that happens, like a bunch of it. It's like fighting each other, and it looks like it looks like. If you're like, hey, what's the end of Song of Ice and Fire? It looks like a bunch of ice and fire fighting each other. And I was
okay.
like, whoa.
And basically that, I get you.
Yeah. I saw it on IMAX, so the screen was really big. So.
It's going to be so great.
And you hate 3D, right?
Hmm?
Do you hate seeing things in 3D? I feel like you do for your eyes.
Unless they're made for
exactly.
it.
Okay, okay.
Like,
oh,
exactly. Something like Gravity was great in 3D because it was shot with 3D cameras. And
yeah, like, I never
go. But taking a normal movie and just going, ooh, now it's balloony.
And we charge more money for
exactly,
the tickets.
That's, and you have
I
to
did,
wear your dumb plastic.
I did see Spy
nonsense.
Kids 3D. And that was,
a fun little
they
experience.
They shot that in 3D, though. They pioneered the technology with that.
Sylvester Stallone did a great job. His face was so big.
True.
Well,
yeah.
Is that the one where they're in the video game and Elijah Wood is in it for like a minute and then he dies?
No,
isn't
I
that
think
Sin
that's...
City?
Also. Isn't that Lord of the Rings?
Isn't that Sharkboy and Lava Girl? no, that maybe. Yeah, maybe. I think that one is. I'm just trying to think if that was the second or the third because they all seem like one to me now.
They made four Spy Kids, I think.
Yeah. Oh, so...
Yeah.
No, the third one was 3D because all the marketing was 3D. So I think that was it. They were in the game because then they showed up in that tower.
Yep.
Things can't always be as simple as like the very first one where it's just the big thumbs running around, you know, Mooglies.
Yep.
Big whatever. Thumbs.
Yeah.
Right.
Spy Kids. We should have known then.
What a weird creation that was. Then.
That things were going to get really weird later.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
I can't wait for in Sam's Old Town chapters, and the ones who want her first Sorella Sam to be the Hermione and go, honestly, Sam, it's like you've never read Hogwarts a History.
Honestly, Sam, it's like you didn't know all this exposition that I'm dropping in your chapters for the plot to progress.
And Sam's like, oh. I love how Sam, like, sailed away from a monastic institution where his best friend is a bastard, and he ended up in Old Town to go to a monastic institution where his best friend is a bastard. Nothing changed. He sailed around halfway, like, the continent, and Aemon died, and he's in the exact same position.
Time is a wheel. Now he's a daddy. Right.
Now he's got Gilly, though.
That's the truth. Yeah, he killed the boy.
Jeez.
He became a man.
That's a lot to think about with Sam's storyline.
Yeah. Yeah, that chapter where Aemon dies and then Sam gets laid. That's a weird chapter.
Yeah,
that is. I don't know how to feel about it.
I mean, that's basically Azor Ahai right there, right? Mm-hmm. Like, born
death
under
and life. Yeah.
Salt and smoke. I mean, you know where he is. He's on that ship.
Then they put him in a barrel.
Yeah.
True.
What do you guys think is going to happen after he gets taken out of that barrel?
Oh, they're going to make delicious rum out of it.
You think so?
Yeah, well, there's that dollar said line.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Since she's made the rum.
I've tasted the rum, I think.
Yeah, Ice and Fire Con's an Ice and Fire Con special for Eliana. I don't even remember what's in it, but she says it all the time. I don't know how I don't remember
it. It's the body of a decaying Targaryen.
Yeah, I mean,
that's gotta be
what
some,
else could you
some
need?
Heavy shit.
You is can perform some magic after
pretty
that.
Cool to you guys that there's a book about the Targaryens, their history being released.
I've heard about it.
Right. True. Now, between books 5 and 6, mm-hmm. written by the same author. It's like, this was just, it seems like this might be the perfect thing to happen. If we're talking about delayed gratification, why not have something like this? Like, so it seems like part of the plan, right?
It's interesting because if you compare it to like J.K. Rowling, she released little miniature side-along books that go with the books she had going. So she released like a little miniature Fantastic Beasts after Goblet of Fire, if you remember. And it was very, very tiny. It had like 50 pages.
I love that little thing. I wore it out.
Yeah, it was a little dictionary. And then she had Quidditch Through the Ages. I had that too. But she released those. And most people are like, well, this is a promotional marketing scheme. Like, George is being forced to do it for HBO, which, yes. But he didn't just do that. I mean, this is expansive. It's full of depth.
You think that might be why the book is coming out now, partially? Just to take advantage of it, but with
Empire of Ash? Come on, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah, I mean, you can't get past Synergy.
I think
at this
point. Well, they literally said in an interview recently that he was asked by HBO to do that before any of the spinoffs so that they had some foundation for it.
I've been trying not to think about that.
Yeah, I know. It's a thing. Like, it literally is a thing.
Is it like shrug or you're like, hell yeah, like, let's celebrate this and make it more fun? Or
I think what he did, though, is, I mean, obviously he has some shitty writer's block because we're creators, we're artists, somewhat, I guess. You call what some of us do art. I don't know about me, but you can call it art.
We know what it's like to look at a blank page.
Yeah, exactly. So you know he's had some crazy writer's block. You know it's been hard. I mean, he has all these plots he has to bring together. He has 155 plus
it's
plot
insane.
Strings. It's insane.
So complicated.
He was this just world talking about written. This. Yeah, that it's he's basically Winds of Winter is basically 20 different books with 20 different protagonists that he has to somehow reconcile into a single book.
And that's what's so amazing. I mean, we all love all of these characters so much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the downside of HBO saying, hey, we really need this book so that we can do some spinoffs and keep this franchise going for $1 million forever.
Right.
Like, that's whatever. It is what it is. I get it. Capitalism. But, like, at the same time, he took that as when you're writing, a lot of people do with their main characters of whatever they're writing, they write a whole other world, which when they write that whole other world, it makes it so their writer's block gets a little, you know, a little more liquid, a little less hard, and it helps them kind of write a whole other area of their characters. So he said, hey, I've always had this canon of these characters. It's an exercise. It's exercising the muscles he's not using. He knows that he is pretty writer's blocked, right? He really just can't do it. He just can't do it right now. So, I don't know. It kind of lubricates the whole brain thing.
Yeah, that's a solid point. You want to work within the universe, but maybe with some characters that aren't giving you that kind of constipated feeling.
Yeah, and he went to town with it. I mean, he made this beautiful anthology of just like, here's a whole part of Targaryen history, and we're going to be reading that tonight.
And he clearly likes those characters, too. I mean, much as the history of, you know, the Targaryens is a bunch of burnt corpses and smashed cities and so forth, Martin's definitely invested in them as characters and the high drama of their interactions. And
he's had a plan this whole time of what each one ended up as, and it just gave him the time to get to actually detail it out finally.
And he clearly really likes the transitions between different kinds of Targaryen kings. That's something he's focused on a lot. The chaos after Viserys the First.
Especially
the chaos after Aegon the Conqueror. Exactly. So that the building up and undoing of Targaryen ambition, just that historical movement, is something that he clearly cares about a lot. So I think watching more of that unfold with greater detail in Fire and Blood Volume 1 is going to be a good time.
Yeah. How much do you think of it is going to directly give an overlord, George is the god in this universe, pat on the back, warm arm around your shoulder about what's left to come in the 6th and 7th books?
I think we'll get a lot of good foreshadowing. Like, even that Elisan stuff, as we said, that with Queen Elisan and Jaehaerys, that entirely is a good nod to what we might see with some of Sansa and Jon's plots to come. I think we're going to see a lot of details about the Dance of the Dragons that can probably be strewn towards Daenerys and Aegon, things that we might see in the future in that plot. I think there's a lot that's going to happen in there. There's a lot of, I heard from a little bird/source that we get to hear a lot about Maria Martell and how she's a direct parallel to a historical leader in Russia that we will kind of hear about.
How'd you hear about this?
Don't worry about it. And
the bird don't ask you.
I never reveal my sources.
Okay.
Like varies. I have little birds.
Right on.
Yeah. So just a lot of really cool things we'll hear and things that we'll be able to apply toward the book. There might be some really direct parallels. There might be some stuff that'll stick out, but I think it'll be a lot more World of Ice and Fire. I think a lot of people are going to be disappointed, or a lot of people might be pleasantly surprised. I mean, I'm going into it with the idea that I think it's going to be great. So maybe I'll be let down a little and go, okay, well, this was a read, I guess, whatever. It was something, but I think I'll love it. I mean,
the cover looks really cool. Yeah. At least.
And what we've read so far, that's the thing, is he's releasing like sample excerpts left and right to promote it. So I'm wondering if it's not going so well promotion-wise.
I mean, that might have always been the strategy.
It might have always been the strategy. But it's like he's already released like three or four excerpts. He's released Alisson's excerpt. I can't talk. Alisson's excerpt. He's released A Dance of the Dragons, King's Landing, like the Battle of King's Landing excerpt of what happened leading up to it. He released Aegon. What was the Aegon one?
Yeah.
Yeah, an Aegon one, and he released like a little, he's released like Targaryen Thursday videos. They're really doing a lot to hype this up, so it's interesting to me that they're hyping it up so hard. Yeah.
I think that's, it's pretty interesting that he's so involved.
I mean, TY will sell itself, so.
Yeah, it seems that there's a little bit of resistance for everyone to really lose their minds about this book, and I understand,
yeah, there's complicated feelings.
I get it, but I don't feel that way. But I'm like excited.
Yeah, there's going to be a place tonight where a very influential author holds court among all of his people, all of his
sure.
dedicated followers. They're like, tell us about your next story. And he's like, King well,
George. Exactly.
Here's what happens. Do you think he's going to read anything tonight?
I think he's going to read an excerpt probably from the book, mm-hmm. I would guess. I don't know how they're doing the Q&A. I know we were talking about that last night. Mm. He's going to answer some questions, I think, but it's like, do you submit your question like beforehand? Did we miss it? Or do you do it like when you get your book? Do you write a question down? What's going to happen? So we don't know. We don't really know. I don't know. Mm. What would you ask, Zach?
What would I ask George?
Yeah, buddy. What you got? Him?
What's your overall big question?
Pretend I'm George. Bring
and
your
then,
question.
Let's bring it in this difficult that, like, keep in mind, your question could be impactful in several ways. It could be something that asks George, like, about his writing. It could be something that does a reveal for the fandom. Or it could be something, like, on a level for you. So, like, what's your question?
And you got to phrase it in a way to get an answer out of him. And he won't just say, nice try, moving on.
You can't just get a flip-flop.
Yeah. You got to be very clever. So what you got?
This is real hard, I know.
This is really hard.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
We were too hard
Strike,
on
Strike, what's your question?
He's like, I want to lay on this cable and unplug it from his computer, please.
Exactly. What are your comments on that, George R.R. Martin?
Trying to roll on
Strike's like, I will be accepting no further comments from George. Thank you.
What would I ask George?
Can I be a dire wolf?
Okay.
Today's episode is sponsored by Lisa. Do you wake up feeling achy, easily distracted, or forgetting things? A quality night's sleep makes all the difference, and the right mattress is the key to getting proper rest instead of just laying down. The Lisa mattress is the product of 30 years of experience and hundreds of hours of rigorous product testing. Designed for body contouring and pressure relief, the Lisa mattress is perfect for all sleepers. You can shop conveniently online with free shipping and 100 nights to try the mattress in your own home. The Lisa mattress is backed by more than 12,000 five-star reviews and loved by more than 300,000 happy sleepers. That is a lot of mattresses. Lisa also donates one mattress for every 10 sold, so you can sleep easy and feel good about your purchase. If you're in the market for a new mattress or if you've been waiting to upgrade one of your own, I heavily recommend receiving your mattress in the mail because it cuts out. It's the same reason why it's convenient to order everything else online. It doesn't seem obvious that a mattress could work like everything else, but it's packed and shipped and it's convenient and it's easy. And right now you can get $150 off the Lisa mattress plus a free pillow at lisa.com/owns and enter promo code OWNS at checkout. This is Lisa's best offer at lisa.com/owns, promo code owns. That's LEESA.com/OWNS, promo code owns.
I would ask George if he had any plans to take us to the places on the map that have been established and not yet explored.
Okay.
And I know that that seems kind of broad, but I think that if I know that there's more places to go, then I think my overall scope and hope of the story so far won't like have settled in. Like I won't have the perspective of the characters now being like, oh, I'm going to watch it unfold.
Sure.
You know, like,
well, he's not going far, 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 like off continent. I know he's said he's not, we're not going to see a Shy,
which is a real disappointment.
Yeah. Stuff like that. So,
I mean, we'll see it in flashbacks from Melisandre probably. Yeah, that's, I'm sure that's where he's going to like shoehorn that stuff in the same way that he probably came up with Eriohota as a POV so he could shoehorn Starfall stuff.
That's what I was talking about. Yeah.
That was really big. From Fire and Blood, the excerpt I read, the Aegon, wasn't the Aegon stuff? He let an excerpt out. This like slipped my mind of how the Oakhearts all got slaughtered by the Dornish.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, of the past of how the Oakhearts, like House Oakheart got slaughtered up by Dornish and Targs. And like, it led so much to Aerys Oakheart. Like, I was like, oh shit, like this makes so much more sense of your hatred for the Dornish kid.
That's not a good place to be.
No, but I mean, that just hit my mind. I'm like, oh, I just remembered one of the excerpts. Yeah.
No, that's true. Aerys has that passage where he's thinking about like all like the tapestries back at his home, and like they're all about like slaughter and war with the Dornish, but he's thinking of them all like nostalgically. And you go, oh damn.
And he like thinks about how like the Oakhearts and have been battling the Dornish for years or whatever.
Yeah, that's which is an interesting, you know, the theme of Reach versus Dorne is interesting because they're probably going to wind up allies to a certain extent and under Team Griff.
Yeah,
a lot of the Reach Lords,
which is big because he's uniting that. I mean, that's what's going to make people think he's a rightful Aegon,
right? And because he's probably a Blackfyre underneath, and that's where he's going to get a lot of his support from the Golden Company and the Reach. But then he's also have the Dornish there, who are the enemies of the Blackfyres. So it's an interesting
because they believe coalition. He's a real Targaryen.
Exactly. Same. Like, there's some interesting coalitions for him. Same way Stannis' coalition has all these different people from all these different backgrounds in it now.
Maybe that's something I would ask him then.
Yeah.
Like that, he's set up a lot of the Dornish versus the Reach, even with the House Oakheart stuff we get
in Fire
and Blood from the excerpt he let out, and just ask him about like what plans it looks like he has, like similar setup for Reach versus Dornish for the Winds of Winter.
That is a much better question than mine.
Well, I've been thinking about, I've been working on something about that, so she's been building up to it. Yeah, I just want some answers. That's why I'm like, George, take longer to write TWOW because I got to put this theory out, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to be done. We still don't know what's going to happen. We still haven't figured it out exactly.
I got like three more essays I got to start writing before The Winds of Winter comes out. Ashara I'm good on because she's not, there's no Ashara reveal till the last book. Like, I'm good. She won't be in The Winds of Winter, guys.
So you think that's going to happen then?
Oh, if we get a reveal of Ashara being alive somehow, it'll be towards the end of the last book. He's not going to have time to put it on the pages, like, fully.
I would probably ask George something about his writing process with Euron, because Euron gets brought up once or twice in the background in the first few books, and then kind of emerges fully formed in Feast, and clearly from the Forsaken is going to be a big deal going forward. So I'd like to ask at like what point in the writing process did Martin decide Euron was going to be a big deal? Because he's not in the pitch letter. None of the Greyjoys are. And he's not mentioned at all in the first book, so I'd be very interested in that.
But Theon's there.
Theon's in the first book, and Balin is mentioned, but Euron is not. He does not. Mm-hmm. He gets briefly mentioned in books 2 and 3, and then he shows up in book 4. So I would be very curious.
I think it's interesting how he took that outline of like the original trilogy, and he took the original outline and he changed it and adapted it so that he could make it further books and give more depth to these characters. And it's interesting because then he introduced like, okay, well, we need another antagonist before the real antagonist, who's like the step below the others. Let's go Euron.
Exactly. Well, I think, he came up with the Greyjoys being a major plot element. It seems like once he decided Tyrion wasn't going to burn Winterfell in the original plans, he was like, okay, I need someone else to do this job, though, in order for the Starks to have this downfall. So then he came up with Theon's plot, And then, yeah, Euron, obviously it's difficult to know because it hasn't really paid off yet, but I think my guess is he came up with Euron when he realized, I need someone to help the others. I need, like, a human agent. I need someone to help them get south of the wall. I need some kind of villain in the south that compels attention while the others are moving to the north, and I think Euron probably developed from there. That would be my guess.
He's filler, yeah.
I would love to get... What's all this about Ashara Dane again? go back to talking about the girl we hear about in 11
She's
sentences.
She's not Phil. Actually.
Actually, it's Tang.
I didn't say she was filler. Filling story arcs. I was just saying that Euron is a villain filler for now.
Well, he hasn't really paid off yet. I wouldn't even say he's that for now.
I mean, he's filling the role of the villain.
We've filled him up, though, in our mind to be that.
Sure. We'll go with that. Not what filler means, but that's fine.
What do you guys think about the information from the excerpt about how Alysanne's dragon reacted to the wall?
Mm.
I think there's obvious, like, the pact.
Okay.
The pact. B, there's obvious magic that the dragon was like, nope, fuck that.
Can you explain the pact?
Well, so we know that there was a pact made between, you know, the children, basically everybody, the first men, the children, everybody that was on the earth. Well, it was probably to uphold the wall and keep, you know, magic on the other side of the wall from the north, so the others keep them on their other side of the wall with the enchantments built around that wall.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing it has a lot to do with that, whatever that pact really was. I mean, that's what I would guess, and that you can't go, you couldn't go, it was like territory, you know, can't go beyond that wall.
So the dragon technically can't fly beyond the wall. Doesn't want to.
Exactly. Right. Well, yeah, there's some questions, because, I mean, then anytime you get into the wall is marking a pact or a border territory, you have the question, okay, but why are the wildlings there then? And the wildlings have been there for centuries and the others didn't show up. So how did that go down exactly? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. Are there spells to specifically keep dragons out? Or is it just like
any
magical force can't go there? I mean...
Maybe other creatures?
Yeah,
like from a place that we might read about in Fire and Blood.
Right.
But then Direwolves came from North
couldn't
the
go beyond
Direwolves
the wall.
Came from North Maybe the wall, it's not only dragons. But then also I think it's like Summer can't sense Ghost, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Once Ghost is north of the wall, like Summer, like... You know, in the astral wolf land can feel Shaggy Dog and Nymeria, but can't feel Summer. So the wall works weirdly.
It's not just dragons.
So maybe
it's different
really,
kinds of creatures that use this sort of psychic sense or something.
Those wards, like Cold Hand says. Melisandre talks about it as like a hinge of the world. So
interesting.
I was going to say, it's like, you know, it's like separate realms almost in a way.
Absolutely.
And it's absolutely like, well, why can't dragons cross? Well, what could kill the others?
Right.
Fire.
That's an interesting manifestation of the
what kills others.
The barrier, like in this fantasy story, and like how it works, that it's like metaphysical but also physical.
Yeah.
It also stands right there, and you can go through it, but you also can't go through it if you have a certain amount of power.
Talk about breaking the fourth wall.
Right, exactly. But now you're totally right. There's so much underworld imagery when Bran and company go through the Black Gate in the Night Fort. Mm-hmm. There's all this kind of imagery and mood around that makes it feel like very much like a descent into the realm of death or just a realm of darkness in general.
Well,
so,
yeah, it's so early and you're like, hey, I'm just going to introduce you to this concept, okay? You're with some kids. That's fine. This is a normal book. Well, it's not a normal book. You get it, but we're going to continue anyway.
Yes.
There's a tree that if you talk to, it's going to go, all right, I'll let you through.
I'll let you through my giant... Mouth. Yeah, it's one of the weirdest moments in the series. It's really not explained at all.
Or like
it's
when
just
they
like
get
this
cried
strange
out.
Alice in Wonderland imagery
I love it.
That comes out of nowhere. And yet it ends with like the lip brushing Bran's forehead.
It's
like
so
a tear.
Awesome.
It's one of Martin's clearest, when I took drugs in my 20s moments in the whole series.
All of Bran's chapters.
All of Bran and Danny's chapters.
Yeah, Bran and
like
Danny's
that.
Chapters.
They're
I thought
the
like that.
Where's the long pig fit in then?
I don't know, Dad.
Oh, yeah, man.
Particularly.
And then there's all the cannibalism, yeah.
Yeah.
That's only going to get worse.
I can't wait.
I think we could keep talking about all of this forever.
I know.
Let's do more podcast stuff before The Winds of Winter comes out.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, we all got to do our prediction episodes once we get it released.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gather all of our feelings together. I'm so glad we got to do this, though.
We tried to do this at Dragon Con, and we just didn't get together.
Well, we got together.
We just didn't
put up
we
all
didn't
these
make
microphones.
Yeah. We didn't make time for this.
Girls Gone Canon.
Yeah, Girls Gone Canon.
Not a cast. You guys should tell everybody the links and the Twitter handles and stuff.
Yeah, you can get us on Spotify, on iTunes, on Google Play, Stitcher, Acast, Podbean. We host on Podbean, girlsgonecanon.podbean.com. You can get us on Twitter at Girls Gone Canon, and we have a Patreon that we have launched some really fun stuff on. Find us there as well.
And you can find the Nauticast on iTunes, on SoundCloud, on Podbean. You can check out our Twitter at NauticastASOIAF, or shoot us an email at NauticastASOIAF@gmail.com. And we also have a Patreon, patreon.com/NauticastASOIAF.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys are going to be doing a live podcast tonight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on YouTube.
And you just launched your YouTube channel, and this is the first thing you're doing from it.
Yep, yep.
So if you're listening to this before this evening and you're not going to be with us in Jersey City for this event, where we all get to hang out with George R. R. Martin, he's totally going to hang out with us and tell us secrets about all the new books, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's part of going to this, right?
Yeah, it's a goal.
Okay, good.
Actually, we all get our copies of TWOW today.
Oh, great. Good.
Like under your seats, Oprah style.
Then we're going to have plenty to talk about then.
Yeah, tons to talk about for months.
What was your YouTube channel if they want to listen to that tonight?
Yeah, it's just Nauticast on YouTube. I think it's just youtube.com/Nauticast. I think it's either that or Nauticast ASOIAF.
Yeah, anyway, just search it.
Just search, put Nauticast into YouTube. We haven't done anything with it yet. This is going to be our first project with it.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.